We are telling the story of the life of Jesus on Sundays, and we started back in December. We're on the Christmas story, right? And we're now telling the story of Jesus, and we're very early. It's going to be a long journey because we are not in a hurry to get through Jesus. He's kind of the reason we do what we do, right? So we're going to talk about Jesus calling his very first disciples, his first disciples who followed him. Now, Jesus had a lot of followers. There was many. There were 70 at one time who were sent out to go town by town in groups of two to spread the message of the gospel. There was 120 devout followers in the upper room after his ascension. There were crowds that were around him at any given time, but he had 12 notable disciples that most of us are familiar with the term the 12 disciples. But most of us probably couldn't name all 12 disciples. If I put you on the spot right now and said, can you name the 12 disciples? A lot of us might be like, I can name half of them or two-thirds of them, unless you learned them in religious school when you were younger, perhaps. I don't know. But they're not all really well known. 7 of the 12 of them have an origin story of how they first began to follow Jesus. And we're going to tell those 7 stories. We're going to tell 6 of them today. Woo! And then 1 of them we're going to save for a future week because it deserves its own Sunday. So, the calling of the first few disciples, particularly the first 4, is a pretty famous story. And this story is told in all 4 accounts of the life of Jesus. Remember that the life of Jesus is told in 4 books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. They are called the Gospels or the Good News of Jesus. And these 4 books all tell how Jesus called the first 4 disciples. But they all tell the story a little bit differently. And that bothers some people, or could. They're like, wait, why is the story not the same? Is that a discrepancy or an error? And the answer is no. I've said it before, I'll say it again. The stories of the life of Jesus are just different people telling the same story about the same person that they believed in, but from different viewpoints, different vantage points. So they're going to have different details to bring to the table. That is not a bug, that is a feature. And so when we read that, we put it together, we look at all the pieces of the story from each person's perspective, it gives us a holistic view. And today we're going to do a good exercise together in understanding how to put those pieces together. And I hope that besides learning the story, it will help you when you go home, when you read the Gospels for yourself, make sense of those spots where the story is a little different. This is how we handle that. And so we're going to begin with Matthew. Now, Matthew and Mark both tell the exact same story, almost word for word. There's reasons for that. I was going to tell you originally, then I realized it takes too long, so I'm not going to tell you. But Matthew and Mark tell the same story, almost word for word. And so we'll read Matthew's version of that together to get us started. Ready? Matthew chapter 4 and verse 18 says, one day, as Jesus was walking along the shore of the Sea of Galilee, he saw 2 brothers, Simon, also called Peter, and Andrew, throwing a net into the water, for they fished for a living. There's a lot happening here. Let me just talk about it for a minute. Jesus is by the Sea of Galilee because Jesus spent a lot of his ministry in the region of Galilee. Remember that Galilee is the region that's above the region of Judea. Judea is where Jerusalem and Bethlehem were. But up, that's where the southern kingdom used to be. But up in Galilee, above there, is where the northern kingdom was in the Old Testament times. This is where Jesus grew up in the village of Nazareth. This is where he's going to be in Bethsaida and Capernaum and around the Sea of Galilee for a long time doing his work. And as he's doing it, he comes down the shore and sees these 2 brothers, Simon, who is called Peter. We're going to see why he's called Peter later on. Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew, and they are fishermen. That's what they do for a living. It says in verse 19 that Jesus called out to them. He said, come, follow me. That's a big idea right there. We're going to see that over and over today. Jesus says, come, follow me, and I will show you how to fish for people. He's even fishing for fish. I'm going to show you how to fish for people. So follow me. In verse 20, it says, they left their nets at once, and they followed him. A little farther up the shore, he saw 2 other brothers, James and John, sitting in a boat with their father Zebedee, repairing their nets, and he called them to come too. They immediately followed him, leaving the boat and their father behind. Now, there's a lot happening there. We're going to see more of the story later in details that are not mentioned there. That's the whole Matthew version. You just read the whole version in Matthew and Mark. Jesus walks by the seashore, sees some fishermen. Hey, follow me. They followed him. They're repairing their nets, which will make more sense why they're repairing their nets. It'll make more sense in a little while here, so hang on. But he walks past them, and they follow him. And that's the whole story. Now, there's a lot more to the story than that. John gives us more details. Luke gives us more details. But Matthew and Mark do not, because Matthew and Mark are not trying to give us the whole sordid affair. They just want you to know, in their story, that Jesus called people to follow him who used to be fishermen. And that's all you need to know as far as they're concerned. They don't get into the weeds of how it went down. They are telling you the cut to the chase version, right? Or as we used to sometimes say, the TLDR version. I used that earlier. Do you all know what TLDR means, right? It means it's a shorthand for too long, didn't read. So here's the short version, right? They gave us the TLDR version of the story. And then the other guys will give us the longer version. But that's probably the version that if you grew up in church, you probably know that version best. That's the kind of the one I heard in Sunday school as a kid. But there's more to the story. Let's check it out. Ready? Okay, let's turn to John chapter 1 in verse 35 and get some more context. It says, the following day, John was again standing with two of his disciples. Let me pause to remind you that there are a lot of people named John in these stories. It could be confusing. There's John the disciple who was just out fishing for a living. There's that John. Then there's John who wrote the book of John, which some people believe are the same John. Others believe that John the Elder wrote the book of John. That's another conversation for a different day. Then there's John the Baptizer. Like, too many Johns right here, right? So you got to kind of pay attention to what's going on. But this part of the story is about John the Baptizer. And if you were with us a few weeks ago, we met John the Baptizer. He was always preparing the way for the Messiah, saying that he's almost here. He baptized Jesus. John had his own disciples who followed him. They didn't follow him full time. They had their own livelihoods, their own businesses or whatever. But in their spare time, they followed John. And this particular day, two of his disciples are with him. It says in verse number 36 that as Jesus walked by, John looked at him and declared, "Look, there is the Lamb of God." Now, John has said this like three times in the scriptures that we've read before. He always, whenever Jesus passed by, he'd be, "Look, there's the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world." And in this particular case, he says to his disciples, "Look, there he is." Verse 37, when John's two disciples heard this, they followed Jesus. They left following John, and they walked after Jesus. Jesus looked around and saw them following. "What do you want?" he asked them. They replied, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" I like what Jesus says to them in verse 39. He says, "Come and see. Come and see." It was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon when they went with him to the place where he was staying, and they remained with him the rest of the day. So they spent the day with Jesus before going back, like they usually did, going back to their normal lives. Okay? So that's what's going on. Here's where the story begins to blend. Verse 40. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of these men who heard what John said and then followed Jesus. Now, that's an insight, isn't it? Andrew, the fisherman that we saw in Matthew, was apparently a disciple of John the Baptizer. And when he wasn't fishing, and he heard this, and he's one of the two guys that spent the day with Jesus. Well, that's an interesting twist. Apparently, they had a history before the story that Matthew told. In fact, it says in verse 41 that Andrew went to find his brother, Simon, and told him, "Hey, we have found the Messiah," which means Christ. "Hey, Peter, Simon Peter, we found Simon, his name is Simon, we found the Messiah." Now, I want to just talk about this for a moment. This is a little glimpse into the idea that Simon Peter and Andrew are both men of faith in their own ways. They had different responsibilities on their shoulders. Andrew, as far as we know, is a single young man. He's running around chasing John the Baptizer and following him. But Peter is not a single man. Peter is a man with a lot of weight on his shoulders. Peter is already showing signs at this point of being the leader that he would go on to be among the disciples, the leader he would go on to be in the early church. Because Peter owns his own boat. Not everyone owned their own boat in the story. Andrew just fished on Peter's boat. James and John met them earlier. They fished on their dad's boat. But Peter had a boat. Peter had a house. Everyone had a house. He had his own house. Peter was married. He had a wife. And he had extended family living with him. Peter had a lot of responsibility on his shoulders to provide. So while Andrew had the freedom to fish with Peter when Peter was fishing, and then to chase after and be with John the Baptizer as a young man of faith, Peter had way too much responsibility to do that. He had a wife to attend to. He had a home and a business to run. But he still was a man of faith. And so probably every day that Andrew came back from being with John the Baptizer, Andrew would tell Peter while they fished about the stories that he experienced. And this time he says to Peter, says Simon, we found the Messiah. And that leads us to this in verse 42. Then Andrew brought Simon to meet Jesus. Andrew brings his brother to meet Jesus. Looking intently at Simon, Jesus said, your name is Simon, son of John, but you will be called Cephas, which means Peter. He's going to change his name. Now, this is not unusual in the scriptures, right? Go all the way back to the Old Testament. There's so many examples. You know, Jacob's name was changed to, anybody remember? Jacob's name became, what was that? Jacob became Israel. Israel. Abram became Abraham. In the New Testament, after Jesus left, one of the early men we meet is Saul. His name later gets changed from Saul to Paul, right? So this is not new. Jesus is like, Simon, I didn't like your name. We'll call you Peter from now on. Okay. So anyhow, but no. So he's going to be known. That's why we call him Simon Peter. But more famously today, Peter. Anyhow, he met Jesus through his brother, Andrew, who introduced them. Because he brought him to Jesus once he met him. And that's the story. That's a backstory, isn't it? That makes a little more sense. Because if you didn't read that story, you'd think that over there in Matthew, Jesus is just walking along the seashore, sees some random fisherman, hey, follow me. Who's that? Beats me. Let's follow him, right? That's not how that went down. They had a history already. In fact, they had more history than just this. Luke gives us even more details. Let's turn to Luke chapter 4. Luke 4, verse 38 says, after leaving the synagogue that day, Jesus went to Simon's home where he found Simon's mother-in-law very sick with a high fever. Please heal her, everyone begged. There's a lot going on there, isn't there? So Jesus has been teaching. If you were with us a couple weeks ago, we saw that Jesus traveled all over Galilee and spoke in the different synagogues. And this particular time, he's near the synagogue by Simon and Andrew's home, and they are at synagogue together. Afterwards, Jesus goes to Simon's home, perhaps for lunch or something, right? He goes to his house because they have a little connection already. We saw that just a minute ago. So they go to his house, and when he gets there, Simon's mother-in-law, who lives there with him, she's sick. She has a high fever. And maybe she had been sick for a while and it had gotten worse. I don't know. But people were worried about her and they begged Jesus to do something to help. Standing at her bedside, he rebuked the fever and it left her. And she got up at once and prepared a meal for them. And now we know why Jesus healed her. He was hungry. He's like, hey man, you got to get up and make me a sandwich, okay? So no, that's not what happened. But no, but here's what's interesting about the story is that Jesus is healed her so effectively that she's instantly like, I'm going to make some food. I mean, how many of you have been sick with a fever and then the fever breaks and you're like, oh, I feel the fever's gone down, but then you're like wiped out, you know, you're drained. And she's so healed, she just gets up and says, I got to do something here. So that's what we might call miraculous. Dare we use the word? So anyhow, that's another story. There's a lot going on before Jesus walks past the water and says, follow me. In fact, even when Jesus goes past the water and says, follow me, there was more to that part of the story too. Luke tells us the rest in the very next chapter. Look at Luke chapter 5 and verse 1. One day, as Jesus was preaching on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, great crowds pressed in on him to listen to the word of God. So he's doing what he's doing. People kept gathering to Jesus. Why? He's doing miracles. He's healing people. They want to get around the miracle worker in case they need a miracle. They want to get around him to hear what he has to say because he obviously knows God, right? What's God have to say to us? So they're pressing in on him as he teaches. Verse 2 says that Jesus noticed two empty boats at the water's edge, for the fishermen had left them and were washing their nets. Not repairing their nets like we saw earlier. Not yet, anyhow. Washing their nets. Now, spoiler alert, whose fishing boats were these, right? This would be the boat that Simon Peter owned, that his brother Andrew fished in with him. This would be the boat that Zebedee owned, that his sons James and John fished in with him. These boats were over there. Jesus was probably in the proximity on purpose because he's about to call them to follow him. But while he's there, the crowds are pressing in on him. He sees the empty boats. The guys are washing their nets. You know why? Because they had just spent the entire night fishing. Folks, I think we have no idea how much pressure the people of Israel felt in general because of the Roman control over their country, Roman rule and Roman taxation, and they wanted to be done with it, but they couldn't be. And if you were a person who had a family to care for, the weight was extra heavy. If you had a business that you owned, the weight's extra heavy. Taxes were due. And so they spent the whole night probably working extra hard trying to catch some fish, and they caught nothing. And now it's morning, they're probably discouraged, they're gonna wash their nets, go home, get a little sleep, come back and try again. But Jesus sees the boat, sees the crowd, and it says in verse number 3, stepping into one of the boats, Jesus asked Simon, its owner, he gets into Peter's boat, Simon, push out into the water. So Jesus sat in the boat and taught the crowds from there. Perhaps it was easier to get a little away from the pressing crowd and sit in the boat and talk to all of them. And I'm sure the guys were probably wanting to get home, but they knew Jesus. Jesus had been around. He helped them. So they're going to help him while they finish washing their nets and listening because they want to hear what he has to say. And then they're going to go home. So Jesus teaches the crowds from the boat. Verse 4. When he had finished speaking, Jesus said to Simon, now go out where it is deeper and let down your nets to catch some fish. Hey, I'm not going to freeload off of you. You let me use your boat. Let's help you catch some fish. Make it worth your while. But look at Peter's response. Master, Simon replied, we worked hard all last night and did not catch a thing. Let me just interpret that for us, okay? He's like, listen, you are a great rabbi. You know the rabbi business really well. We know the fishing business really well, okay? We would never tell you how to do the rabbi thing because you're rocking it. We love what you're doing. We're big fans. But we know about fishing, so, you know, we all got our lanes. We'll stay in our lanes, right? We tried this already. They're not biting today. I imagine that Jesus just kind of let him talk and just stared at him. So finally, what are you going to say? So Simon's like, but if you say so, okay, at your word, you know, if you say so, I'll let down the nets again. Come on, boys, you know. Verse 6 says, and this time their nets were so full of fish that they began to tear. Now we're starting to get into the meat of the story. No pun intended. Their nets are beginning to tear. That's a miracle. Hey, you catch a few fish, that would have been better than the whole night. Hey, that would have been pretty cool. The experienced fisherman caught no fish. The teacher says, throw out, you catch a few, you got dinner for a couple days, you can sell a few at the market. That's awesome. But that's not what happens. So many fish somehow end up in those nets that the nets, which are built for the job, are tearing. What? That's crazy. It says, a shout for help brought their partners in the other boat, that would be James and John, their father Zebedee, and soon both boats were filled with fish and on the verge of sinking. Folks, that's crazy. The fish was such a big haul that the entire boats, not again, there's plenty of room on the boats. The boats were so filled with fish, both of them, that they're on the verge of sinking under the weight. Nets are tearing. It's a whole to-do. That's a miracle. That's an unheard of miracle. That's a game-changing miracle for them. You can pay off those tax debts to Rome. You could save your struggling business. You could feed your family for a while. You could pay off some bills. I mean, this changes everything. It's a miracle. Look what happens in verse 8. When Simon Peter realized what had happened, he fell to his knees before Jesus and said, "Oh Lord, please leave me. I'm such a sinful man." Peter is overwhelmed by emotion. Why? Why was he overwhelmed by emotion? He's already met Jesus. What's the big deal this time? In fact, he's already seen Jesus do a miracle. Jesus healed his mother-in-law. Maybe he wasn't excited about that one. Oh, thanks. She'll live longer. Great. No, I'm sure that wasn't the case. But anyhow, but something happened in this particular story where now he's excited. Now he's overcome. You say, why? Because this was his livelihood. You think, well, Arlen, isn't your mother-in-law more important than your livelihood? Sure. But here's the thing. This livelihood put food on the table for him and his wife and his mother-in-law and everybody else. This kept them alive. This kept them fed. If this goes, if the business goes, if the taxes fall behind, if the government, you know, shuts them down, if he loses anything, he's buried. Then he can't provide for anybody. They're all in trouble, and he failed. This was very personal. In fact, he's so broken up, I imagine that he spent some nights before this one crying out to God. He's a man of faith. No doubt he prayed a lot. Maybe he didn't always pray those happy prayers. You ever pray those non-happy prayers? Maybe out in the boat sometimes in the middle of the night. God, I'm struggling to get by. I mean, I believe in you, but come on, where are you? What's going on here? God, do you know what my struggles? Can you help? Do you even care about us? And then all of a sudden, Jesus shows up. Maybe that same night that happened, right? Shows up and says, hey, preach from your boat? Sure. I'm kind of discouraged. Nothing got caught last night. Thanks. Sure, use our boat, Rabbi. And then he's like, hey, let's catch some fish. And he catches so many fish, it changes everything. And maybe all those realities that God did help him and that Jesus was right there and that Jesus no doubt knew some of those thoughts he had and those prayers maybe he prayed. He felt so ashamed and maybe unworthy. He falls down on his knees dramatically, right, in front of Jesus. And he's like, just please walk away. I don't deserve to be in your presence. I'm such a sinful man. Just don't look at me. Just look away. He's feeling bad, right? But look what Jesus says to him. Look at verse 9. It says, for he was awestruck by the number of fish they had caught, as were the others with him. His partners, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, were also amazed. Then Jesus replied to Simon. He says, hey, don't be afraid. From now on, you'll be fishing for people. There's that phrase again that we saw from Matthew earlier. Follow me and I'll help you start fishing for people. He said, this is where it all happened. From now on, you'll be fishing for people. This is the rest of the story. Hey, you've been fishing for fish, but I got something better for you. And it's going to be exciting. So follow me. It says in verse 11, as soon as they landed, they left everything and they followed Jesus. Who are they? Well, we know from earlier who they are. Peter and Andrew, his brother. James and John, the brothers, the sons of Zebedee. They followed Jesus from that point on. And that, my friends, is the story of the first four disciples that Jesus called. And that's the full version. Matthew and Mark gave us the TLDR version. And then John gives us some backstory. Luke gives us the rest of the details. And now you know the whole thing. Now, there's one more story to tell you about two other disciples, number 5 and 6, that Jesus called to follow him. And we'll tell that briefly. It's only told about in John. Let's look at it real quick. John chapter 1, verse 43 says, the next day, in this story, the next day, Jesus decided to go to Galilee. He found Philip and said to him, come, follow me, right? Same thing he said to the others, follow me. And look what Philip does. It says, Philip was from Bethsaida, Andrew and Peter's hometown. They're all from the same hometown. He's got a lot of guys from this region following him. It says in verse 45 that Philip went to look for Nathanael, his friend, and he told him, hey, we found the very person that Moses and the prophets wrote about. His name is Jesus, the son of Joseph from Nazareth. Now, that's interesting. That's interesting because Philip's reaction when Jesus said, follow me, was the exact same reaction that Andrew had earlier. What did Andrew do? Andrew went and found his brother and said, you got to come meet Jesus. What does Philip do? He goes to his friend Nathaniel. You got to come meet Jesus. You know what they're doing? They're already fishing for people, right? They're already fishing for people. They're already out there saying, hey, you got to come meet Jesus with me, man. You got to believe, you're going to believe this because we're following him. That's part of the job, right? So so Nathaniel, now who's Nathaniel? We don't know. But we're going to see in a moment a detail that's going to make some sense that apparently Nathaniel has been sitting down underneath a fig tree, just sitting there. And I imagine, based upon the way I read the story, I speculate that he was going through a tough time. Maybe like Peter was trying to catch some fish and figure out how to provide a living for his family. Nathaniel's going through something. Maybe he's like got some business problems or some financial issues. Maybe he's got some relationship struggles. Maybe he's got some health things going on. I don't know. But he's just sitting under the tree. And I picture he's praying and saying to God, God, do you even know what's going on? Do you know where I'm at today? Now don't lie now. Have you ever been there before? You ever been to a spot in your life where you're like, God, do you see what's happening? Are you with me? Are you aware? Because I know you are. I know you are. But sometimes I'm like, I wonder. It's been hard. God, do you see me? Right? And I don't know what Nathaniel's going through, but maybe something like that has taken place. But he's sitting under that tree when all of a sudden Philip runs up all hyper and excited. Hey, we found the Messiah, the person. His name is Jesus. He's the son of Joseph from Nazareth. And Nathaniel's reaction is kind of funny. Nathaniel says in verse 46, Nazareth. Nazareth, exclaimed Nathaniel. Can anything good come from Nazareth? Oh, thanks. It sounds like you're real big fan of Nazareth there, aren't you? Like getting that Cedar Lake love or something. I don't know. Like, it's Nazareth, that little dinky little poor village. Like, that's not exactly the hotbed of prophets. I don't know if Nathaniel's being grumpy because he had a bad day or if he's just being like a nerd. He's like, well, actually, I've studied it and no prophets have come from Nazareth. I don't know what he's doing. But somehow he's pushing back at Philip's excitement. He's throwing cold water on it a little bit, perhaps. I don't know. What do you say to that? What does Philip say to that? Well, here's what Philip said. He says, come and see for yourself. I love that. He's like, I can't answer your question. Don't know if I should answer your question, but just come and see. That's the same thing that Jesus said earlier to Andrew, right? Come and see. Come and see for yourself, man. And so they do. As they approached, Jesus said to Nathanael, now here is a genuine son of Israel, a man of complete integrity. I can imagine Nathanael's doing one of these, me? You talking about me? And so he says in verse 48, how do you know about me, Nathanael asked. Jesus replied, I could see you under the fig tree before Philip found you. Oh, man. Folks, that statement, you're about to see it for yourself. I'm not making it. That statement was mega impactful. Jesus saying those words to Nathaniel hit a deep nerve. Maybe because he was going through something where he said, God, do you see me? And Jesus said, I saw you when you were under that fig tree wondering. I saw you before. I already knew where you were. The answer is yes. It's so impactful to Nathaniel. It's so impactful. Then Nathanael exclaimed in verse 49, he says, Rabbi, you are the Son of God, the King of Israel. He's like, he went from skeptical, Nazareth. Now he's like, Shazam, you are really who you say you are. You're the Son of God, you're the King of Israel. Jesus asked him, do you believe this just because I told you that I had seen you under the fig tree? You will see greater things than this. He's like, Nathanael, You're all in now, completely all in, because I told you I saw you under the fig tree. Hey, I'm not downplaying that. That was pretty cool of me, right? I got you, didn't I? But that's all it took to get you to fully believe. Buckle up, pal. You ain't seen nothing yet. Jesus goes on to say this. Then he said, I tell you the truth. You will all see heaven open and the angels of God going up and coming down on the Son of Man, the one who is the stairway between heaven and earth. And in that moment, Jesus makes a bold claim about who he was. He's not just another prophet. He said, I'm not just another rabbi. I am the Messiah, but I'm more of a Messiah than you even thought I was going to be. I am the God-man. I am fully divine and fully human. I am the stairway between heaven and earth. I am the door. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the one mediator between God and man. He says, you're with him. And you follow me, you ain't seen nothing yet. What you're going to see over the next few years is going to rock your world and will rock the world. It's a pretty bold statement by Jesus right there. And that's the story of how Jesus called 6 of his disciples to follow him. Now, I want to wrap it up a little bit with telling you a little bit of, I want to say a few things before we're done from the story. But before I do, I want to do something a little unusual today. There's there's a series called The Chosen. I don't think you've watched The Chosen before. It's a good show. It's several seasons in now. It's about the life of Jesus as told through the eyes of those who followed him, who were chosen to follow him, right? The people of Israel. And so Jesus, a story in The Chosen is really well done. You should watch it if you haven't. We've not seen all of it yet, but we've enjoyed what we've watched so far. And we reached out and contacted the producers of the show, and they agreed to let churches, our church and other churches who want to, use clips from the show The Chosen sometimes to help tell a story if we're using the story in church. Well, guess what? We're telling the whole story of Jesus, so we have lots of clips we want to use potentially. So we decided to try one today, and if it goes terrible and you hate it, we'll never do it again. But we're gonna show one today. It's a 5-minute clip from the first season of The Chosen, where Jesus does the miracle of having Peter and Andrew catch all the fish and fill their boat. It's that story right there, okay? Now, let me give you a little backstory in case you haven't seen it. This is season 1, episode 4. Prior to this moment in the show, Peter has been, they've really dramatized how Peter's struggling. Again, he's got a wife, a sick mother-in-law, a family, a boat, a business, the taxes are crushing him. In fact, the night before this happens in the series, he's out in the boat just screaming out to God in frustration about, you know, where are you in the middle of all of this? He's desperate. He's struggling. He's a bit angry. And then Jesus comes along, uses his boat to teach from, and then turns around and says, let's catch some fish. And has this miracle moment that just rocks Simon Peter's whole world. Let's watch the clip together before I finish. Such a good show. I hope that you have get a chance to enjoy it if you haven't. But anyhow, that's it for today. So where does that leave us? Like, okay, Arlen, cool story, bro. But what does that do for us? This is what I've been saying to you since we started this journey together. Come on. We've been saying for all this time that I want you to know what's in the Bible. I want you to know what's in the Bible because I believe it's transformative. I believe it's the words of life. But we don't want you just to have information. We want you to have inspiration, right? So that will lead to transformation. So what does that leave us? What is Jesus saying to you and to me amidst our hustle and our worries? Because let's be honest, we're not much different than old Simon Peter and Nathaniel under the fig tree and all the others. We all have our stuff, don't we? So if you're worried about your finances and how it's going to work out, or maybe a job that you're trying to get or keep, maybe it's a business that you started and you're hustling to build something of meaning for yourself. Maybe we're struggling with relationships or some drama going on. Perhaps there's some personal things that we need therapy with or whatever. We have our stuff that we say, God, I believe in you. I'm praying to you. God, help. And we're all trying to figure it out. And God does care and God does help. He steps in like we've seen over and over again. At times when we almost think he won't, he shows up and reminds us he's still there. But here's what I want us to ask today. What is he saying to us? What is Jesus saying to us? And I imagine what he says to you and me today is the same thing he said to those men that day. Follow me. Follow me. You're like, what do you mean, Arlen? You mean I should sell, quit my job, and just become a nomad like them and just follow Jesus wherever he might call me? No, that's not what I'm saying. That wasn't the case with a lot of people in the story of Jesus. There were some people who left their jobs to follow him, but there were others who they became his followers, and it doesn't show that they did that. A few times it happened, but others supported his ministry different ways. The point is just to follow him. The point is to trust him enough that we look at him and say, God, you know what's best. You know what's best in my life, in my daily life. That when I don't think it makes sense, like tossing my net back into the water when I already know it's a waste of time, but you think I should, is when you think something's better than I think, I'm going to trust you and I'm going to follow you wherever that might take me. Follow me. You're like, well, Arlen, following Jesus, will that make my life easier? I wouldn't say that. Good. But Jesus also one time said, if you'll deny yourself and take up your cross and follow me, that don't sound easy. Sometimes it's a hard calling, but it's better. It make your life better. Will it make your life, will it make you richer? It could, I suppose, yeah. Maybe that's the calling. Or maybe. Like they got richer for a moment there, then they left it all behind. Maybe it's something different. But it will make it better. Because we all know people. Come on now. We all know people with money who are miserable. We all know people who have easy lives who are unhappy. Don't we? Those things are the things that we want to know. If I follow Jesus, will I have it easier or richer? And those things have not brought anyone happiness. And maybe that's our lot, and maybe it's not, but the point is to follow him. I used to always say this, following Jesus will make your life better and will make you better at life. So follow him. Jesus says to you today, follow me. Oh, but he says, by the way, follow me and bring a friend. Bring a friend. Like Andrew did when he brought his brother, like Phil did when he brought Nathaniel. And you're like, Arlen, I would love to bring a friend, because by the way, that's what we do. If we follow Jesus, if we've been transformed, because let's be honest, the call of Jesus following is more than just a sense of saying, I believe. Yes, we believe. We need to believe. Believing is the first, is kind of the introductory idea to Jesus. Believing that Jesus is who he said he was and that he came to do what he said he came to do is what we, by believing that we accept the gospel. We accept the good news that God so loved the world that he gave his son. And we embrace the hope that he brings to the world. We embrace and have peace in our hearts and joy that comes from faith in him. So yes, believe. That's wonderful. But believing should lead us to follow. If we trust him, certainly we would follow him. Faith leads to fellowship. That's the whole point. Jesus over and over again in scripture says, follow me. And instantly in these stories, the followers brought a friend, which is interesting. Because if we're excited about what Jesus would do for us, certainly we would want others to know. Those we work with, those who we live near, those who are our family members, those who share our interests and hobbies, we want to say, hey, come along. Bring a friend. You're like, well, Arlen, I think that's a great idea. We should all do that. But here's my pushback. I don't know how to answer their hard questions. What if I invite someone to Jesus and they have hard existential questions like they probably will? What do I say then? Well, I don't know. Nathaniel asked a pretty goofy question earlier. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? And what did Philip say? Come and see. We can all do that. We can all say, just come and see for yourself. Now you're like, well, in fact, you could invite them to church that way. Come and see. Come to church. You're like, well, Arlen, is bringing them to church the same as bringing them to Jesus? Not necessarily. But bringing someone to church is a place to hear the songs about Jesus, hear teaching about Jesus, get around people who are following Jesus, and break down some walls and answer some questions, right? It's a great step in the direction. So if you don't know what else to do, just say, come and see. Did you know that national surveys have shown, it's amazing actually, national surveys have shown that, in-depth studies, that people who came to church for the first time, by far the reason they came, of all the reasons, was they were invited by somebody. In fact, the people who don't go to church, about if you would go to church, some would never go to church, but those who would, what would help you get you there? And almost the same percentages would say, if I was invited. Because let's be honest, it's hard to just walk into a church on your own and just say, I don't know what I'm doing here or what to do, but here I am. But if someone invites you, then it's a little easier. Now, the people who show up to a church uninvited are people who are either desperate in life or who already have been in church before and kind of know the drill, and they're just trying a new church. But people who have no idea, an invitation makes all the difference in the world. And we've seen that over and over again. And Jesus says, follow me. And you know what that leads us to do? To fish for people. Follow me and bring a friend. So we'll stop there today. We'll pick up the story next week as we continue the story of the life of Jesus. But for today, I don't know about you, I think he's worthy of our trust and our fellowship.